I got to warn you, if you've not heard the show before, I talk a lot, but I'm incredibly entertaining.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
This is just real.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. I think I got it all covered. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you. Welcome to the program. I hope you've got the official Ron Van Dam uniform on when you listen to this show, which would be the baseball cap with the brim in the back of the head and the strapless bra. Okay. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's up? What's up, man? Oh, how you doing? You doing okay? This is the part of the show where I involve you. It's interactive. I can't hear you, but I make believe that I can. Like some type of fictitious relationship. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and I want you to respond as quickly as possible before I ask the next one. So how are you today? Good to hear that. Are you having a good day so far? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. Oh, wow, how old was he? Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm so sorry. Okay, well, all right. I'm so sorry. My thoughts are with you. I mean, not really. We're just saying that. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Okay, that didn't work out too well. Let's continue with the program. As I said on yesterday's show, or the show before, I can't remember which one. I think it was the show before. I went to New York City over the weekend, and I discovered... I love to walk the streets of New York City like some type of wandering Jew, which I guess I am. Like some type of aimless stripper, like some type of lost prostitute. I love to roam the streets. And this is the way I get my exercise. There's nothing interesting about walking around in Massachusetts at all. Sometimes I'll walk around Boston. Sometimes I'll actually drive. This is how fucked up I am. Sometimes I will drive to Boston, park the car for like $30, and just walk around Boston for the whole day and make my Fitbit proud of me. It's not that I get exercise. It's that my step counter is proud of me. It's not really my counter. It's my step counter. Oh, by another marriage? Yes, it is by another marriage. I want to make it proud of me. I want my little machine to say, ooh, you did well today. You took a lot of steps. So when I go to New York City, I walk like crazy. I don't walk like crazy. I mean, I don't make stupid moves or anything. You know, I'm raising my feet above my head, and I don't walk crazy. But I mean, I'm crazy for walking. I'm crazy for walking. Not Christopher Walken. For walking around. Stop confusing me. I noticed the two worst jobs in the world. And one of them I noticed in New York City, and the other one I noticed in Boston. I will start with the New York City notification. This is the worst job in the whole world. I would rather be put in jail than have this kind of job. And here it is. A doorman at a New York apartment building. How awful could that be? It's usually a guy. You stand on your feet for most of the day. You stand in the lobby. Now, the lobby is not big. In a New York City little apartment building, there's not a big lobby. It's maybe a couch or two and a little bit of a desk. Nobody's checking in. Nobody's checking out. People live there. And to live in New York, these are expensive places to live. I mean, these are people with money. So all day, you stand on your feet and do absolutely nothing. And that would be bad enough on its own. There's no place to stand. There's nothing to do. You stand in this lobby and you just look at the ceiling and go, and then you pace and you wander, and then you wander outside the front door of the apartment building, and you just stand there, and you just stand there, and then you go back inside, and you just stand there. It's so incredibly boring. That wouldn't be bad enough, as bad as that is. But then you have to interact with the same damn people every damn day. At 8 o'clock, Mr. Johnson comes downstairs, and he's on his way to work. And you say the same thing for every day of your life. Good morning, Mr. Johnson. Good morning, Robert. Nice day out. Yes, it is. And then Mrs. Katz comes downstairs with her little chihuahua or something like that in her purse. And she comes walking downstairs and, good morning, Mrs. Russell. Good morning, Robert. Done. I mean, it's all, can I get the door for you? That's all you do. You get the door for people. That's your entire existence is getting the door for people. And then there might be some residents in this building that actually are talkative because they're bored too. And you have to listen to their bull crap every single day, and you can't do a damn thing about it because it's your job to stand there. And they talk and they talk and they talk and they talk, and you just stand there and you take it all in. I think it's the worst job on the planet. But then I realized, as bad as that is, there's another job that I discovered in Boston that was equally as horrible. A while ago, I went to the Museum of Art in Boston, a very, very nice museum. I went in there to look at museum things, and I'm looking, and I'm noticing, because I notice way too much. I have an overactive mind. Did you ever realize that? Everything I have on me is overactive. My mind, my bladder, everything. The only thing that's not overactive is my body. It's just my body don't want to react to anything. My body don't want to do anything. I tell my body all the time, let's exercise. My body says, nah, I don't really want to. I'm not into it, man. And my mind says, come on, let's exercise. Let's get into shape and be fit and lose some weight and feel good and let's go. And my body says, nah, really not. If you don't mind, I'm going to sit this one out. Well, I can't exercise my mind. I guess I can, but it doesn't really do anything for my body. My body just refuses to do it. I'll drag my body and I'll start playing some music and start doing some push-ups or some gyrations. And my body says, this is very embarrassing, Ron. We must stop this immediately. This is like, what if someone should see us? There's nobody here. I don't care. There's a mirror somewhere, isn't there? My body just won't do it. I signed up with Planet Fitness a couple of years in a row. Never went because every time I would say, okay, time to go to Planet Fitness. And my body would say, no, it's not. There's no time to go to Planet Fitness. We're not going. So anyway, so I'm in a museum and I'm looking at museum pieces, and I'm in one of the rooms where they have some artwork and stuff. And I'm noticing the museum guards. Now, there's a number of them. There's probably like 20 or 30 of them because it's a big museum. And I'm watching, I'm not looking at the paintings. I'm not looking at the artifacts. I'm watching the museum guards. I think that's what they call them. These are people, men and women, dressed up in what look like doorman uniforms, jacket and tie, and a little thing around, a little ribbon around their neck with an identification card dangling somewhere between their cleavage. That's how we know that they're employed there. And they just do nothing but stand there. They don't open doors for anybody. There's no doors to open. They don't interact with you. They don't answer any questions. They don't tell you about the art. They just stand there. And they're confined to a certain room or a certain part of a room. That's their territory. And you'll see them pacing. You'll see them looking incredibly bored and depressed. Really depressed. If there was a noose coming down from the ceiling in a museum, guards would be hanging themselves. It's a horrible, depressing, lonely, awful job. They say nothing to anybody. They do absolutely nothing. I don't quite understand what their purpose is, but they're sprinkled all over the museum to the point where you are never alone at any part of the museum. There's always a guard looking at you, pacing around. And I'm thinking, does the museum think that I'm going to take an 18th century painting and slip it under my coat and walk out with it? I mean, I assume that all these things are alarmed anyway. Why are there the museum guards? What are you guarding? What are you doing? What is your purpose? Now, I'm sure they have some purpose, but I don't know what it is. And I don't think they know. Can you imagine going to a job interview for a museum guard? And they sit you down and they say, hey, well, this is an interview for museum guard, Mr. Van Damme. Okay, I think I can do it. What are the requirements for the job?
You have to stand there.
Uh-huh. And?
Well, that's about it. What education do you have?
College degree.
A little overqualified.
In other words, how can you tell anybody what you do for an... If someone says, Ron, what do you do for a living?
I'm a museum guard.
I think their response would be,
oh, that means you don't know how to do anything?
They hired you just to stand there and do nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you imagine working 8 hours just standing there and doing nothing? I would go crazy, man. I would go loony. And they never talk to the people. They never talk to them. They're supposed to talk to them. You're not supposed to have conversations with them. Maybe the only question that you answer would be, where are the restrooms? That would be about it. And I think to have the museum guard job, you have to know where the restrooms are. Otherwise, what good are you? I don't understand. Now, maybe if it's a museum where you can't take any photographs, maybe they would say, I'm sorry, no photographs allowed. That would be another thing that they might say. But in most museums, you kind of can take photographs. What a horrible, horrible job. I don't think there's any pension involved. I don't think you would even know if you were retired or not.
I was a museum guard, now I'm retired.
What'd you do when you were a museum guard?
Nothing, just stood there.
What do you do now that you're retired?
Nothing, I just stand there.
These are jobs that I can't imagine. I would love one day to meet a museum guard. And I think it would be one of two extremes. Either the guy or the girl would be so talkative because they never get to talk to anybody at all, ever, So they would be like overcompensating, or they would be incredibly depressed people.
Joe, how's your job at the museum?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
That would be awful.
It would be awful.
So no matter what you do, if you sit in a cubicle all day and data process, or maybe you're a cashier somewhere, be proud, man, because at least you're doing something. At least you're using your brain a little bit, as opposed to just pacing back and forth day after day. The same old floor, the same old ceiling. I guess the most exciting thing for a museum guard is they change the exhibition every 4 months. Oh boy, that should be fun.
The three sweetest words in podcasting? Ron Van Dam. Wow, gave myself a little erection saying that one. And I forgot to turn off the microphone.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
Yeah. It's the winter where I am. It's the first day of winter. It's the winter solstice. And I have no idea what salt sticks have to do with the winter, but apparently people eat salt sticks in the winter. Or solstice. Winter solstice.
And of course, this is around the time that you have your big holidays, Christmas and Hanukkah, which was a Hanukkah. It was a holiday that was created in order to rid yourself of excess phlegm. Phlegm being one of the most interesting words in the English language because it doesn't begin with an F. It's one of those, I got you, stupid idiot words. Those are the words that make you feel like a stupid idiot. There are two kinds of people. There are stupid idiots, and there are just regular idiots. You might think stupid idiot is a redundant term. It's not. It just means that you're like a really, really big idiot. And here's the difference, and I don't want to insult anybody, but here's the difference. Phlegm begins with a P. If you know that, you are just a regular idiot. You're a regular person. You went to school and somehow you soaked up that information. If you're a stupid idiot, you thought it began with an F and you would spell it F-L-E-M, similar to Ian Fleming with the James Bond series. And again, I'm not here to insult you. I'm simply here to discriminate against you. That basket of deplorables, phlegm begins with an F. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, Hanukkah. Anyway, this is actually more painful for me than it is for you, by the way. I just want you to know that. I think it's important for you to know that. Hanukkah is an 8-day affair. I've talked about this before. Hanukkah kids, they actually get presents for 8 days in a row. I believe it's 8 days. I believe it is, from what I recall from my youth. I believe you get 8 little stupid gifts. You get a plastic fork, a plastic spinning top. You get a yarmulke. By the way, and by the way, yarmulke begins with an F. I saw a guy, it's kind of funny. I saw a guy walking down the street and he was totally bald and he was wearing a yarmulke. For those of you that aren't familiar with a yarmulke, it's different than a harmonica in a sense that you don't put it in your mouth. You wear it on your head.
yarmulke is like a little skull cap. It's like a doily. It's a doily. It's like a coaster. It's like a fabric coaster that you wear on the top of your head. It shows reverence and it shows humility. And most of my Jewish friends don't even know what humility means. Yet they wear this little thing on their head. And this guy was totally bald, and yet he had this yarmulke on his head. And I watched very carefully because my immediate fascination was, how does this thing stay on his head? Is it super glued there? Is there Velcro that he put on his head and then to make the thing stick on it? And then I noticed he bent down to pick something up and the yarmulke didn't move. Now I'm thinking that this fabric has been implanted in his head. If only they made hair pieces that were this resilient. Here's a bald guy wearing a yarmulke, and I couldn't figure out how that was possible. Now, personally, I think yarmulkes are incredibly wonderful invention for the Jewish people. Because if you happened, and you don't have to be Jewish to have a bald spot on your head. Most men, 50% of all men over the age of 45 start losing their hair big time. And it starts happening really, really quick. And the place you lose your hair is right in the middle of your head, right on the top of the middle of your head. That's exactly where the yarmulke is placed. So I'm thinking that the yarmulke was not invented by any prior Jewish culture thing where it shows piousness and humility. I'm thinking it was invented by Jewish people to cover their bald spot. What an incredibly intelligent thing to invent. You don't need to have wigs or toupees. Become a Jew. Become a Jew. Become an Orthodox Jew. Wear the yarmulke in the middle of your head on the top. No one will ever know you're bald up there. These guys are not stupid. These people are not stupid.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, the podcast world's version of painful itching and swelling. You know they sell a cream for that, right? It's over the counter. Works really well. I've had to use it a lot.
You're looking for a job. You don't want to be a doorman. You don't want to be a museum guard. No, no. You want a real job. So we thought we would speak to account temps. They've been around for quite some time, and they hire people. And maybe you'd be interested in this.
Hi, Ron.
How you doing there, Bill?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Bill Driscoll is the New England District President of Account Temps, which is a division of Robert Half. And they're based out of Boston in our listening area. So you can wave out the window. You'll probably see me. All right, maybe not. You know, the economy is supposed to be wonderful. Lowest unemployment rate since just before that horrible situation in 2008. It's like best since 2007, 2006 when things were booming. Yet there are a lot of people who still can't find jobs. How do you explain that?
Well, I think that obviously unemployment's very low, and when you're talking about the skilled areas, for example, college-educated unemployment is at about 2.3%.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a really good time to be looking for a job, and demand's really, really high. So it is a good time to be out there looking.
But how do you actually find something? I mean, how do you have to knock on every door or look at every ad? What's the smartest way of approaching this?
The best way is to do your homework. There's so much information available online about different companies and different openings. Don't just take a blanket vanilla approach.
Uh-huh.
Research the different companies. And even today, you can look at different contacts or the person that you might be interviewing with on LinkedIn and customize your approach to each job that you're seeking.
Okay. So how does one look different than the next applicant standing next to them that might have equal or similar experience?
Well, again, number one, the better prepared applicant who is customizing their approach and uh-huh. knows about the company and maybe about the job and a little bit more history, Maybe he's researched the interviewer on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And then the one that also doesn't make mistakes. We see a lot, a quarter of the CFOs that we interviewed saw typos or grammatical errors in resumes.
Yeah, yeah.
And those obviously don't help you at all.
Bill, does personality have a lot to do with it?
Definitely. I think if you have a good energy level and you're able to have a conversation, again, a knowledgeable conversation with your interviewer about the company, about the job, you're able to talk about your accomplishments, not just your job duties.
Right.
That's a mistake that a lot of interviewees make. They're just talking about the actual duties of the job rather than an impact that they had or something that they really accomplished. That'll help stand out against your competition as well.
Okay. What about dressing for a job interview? Do you have to dress? Do you have to put clothes on?
Yes. Yeah, it's helpful.
Okay.
dressing professionally is really important. But dressing, again, this is something that you can research the different environments at companies.
Mm-hmm.
But we always encourage candidates to be overdressed rather than underdressed.
Yeah, okay. Hey, are there any little tips that nobody really ever knows about that are really incredible formulas for succeeding here?
I think we talked about, obviously, being prepared, doing your homework. I think what I would say to listeners today as well is go offline, not just online. Make sure that you're networking in all different areas. Join a professional group, networking groups, professional groups, and get your name out there any way you can, online and offline, regarding your job search and what you're looking for.
Now, if you are a company and you're looking to staff, a lot of companies do go through organizations like Account Temps.
Absolutely.
So how does one, like, become a candidate for that?
Well, specific to Account Temps, you could go to accounttemps.com and register. We've got 8 offices in the Boston area, and so we can help you, you know, stand out and get interviews right away with different companies throughout the Boston area.
And even though the name is Account Temps, it's not just temps necessarily, right?
That's correct. We're a division of Robert Half, and we place people on a temporary and a permanent basis and a temp to perm basis.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you realize it, but as far as I'm concerned, agencies, quote-unquote, like this, used to be by the dozens and hundreds when I was growing up, and that was what you did. Now, not so many of them. They've kind of fallen by the wayside because of the internet, but there's still nothing like having a professional sit down with you, like Account Temps, and actually going over your strong points, your weak points, and helping you build the strong ones and getting you that job.
There's no doubt about it. And working as a temporary through Account Temps is a great way to get a live tryout.
Yeah.
Maybe get an opportunity with a company that you might not otherwise get just from kind of the outside or applying on your own. But, you know, to get in the door and be able to show companies what you can do is a really, really good way to be looking for a job.
Excellent. Okay, so once again, where do we go website-wise, or even phone number-wise, I suppose?
AccountTemps.com or 617-951-4000.
I haven't heard a phone number in a long time. Congratulations. Congratulations.
But Account Temps, then use AccountTemps.com, Ron.
Okay, all right, fine. Bill Driscoll, thank you so much, and have a happy holiday.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. What a nice man. He's a nice man. Nice man. He's a very, very nice man. What's in your future?
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your monthly New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. Let's see what the stars have planned for you. Aquarius, your life lately is the result of a lot of really questionable choices. I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I do see a lot of Mexican prison food. Pisces, watch out for your evil twin. Not the one you already killed, the one you weren't aware of. Aries, in your endless search for meaning, remember to check between the couch cushions. Taurus, you've got a career change coming. You probably weren't thinking about it and didn't know about it, but your bosses and coworkers certainly have. Remember, friolators get really hot. Gemini. Bad sushi means a good lawsuit. Mazel tov. Cancer. Chances are pretty good that you are going to get hit by a bus or a derailed train. Leo, don't stand too close to Cancer. Libra, romance is in the air for you. So is a raging STD, thanks to Miss or Mr. Right. Or both. Virgo, start saving now for your dream vacation. Looks like the money will go to bailing out your quote-unquote Uncle Freddy again, but it's best to plan ahead. Sagittarius, exposure to a leaky microwave at a chemical plant will give you superpowers. Or some kind of really bad tumor, not exactly sure which one right now. Sorry. Capricorn, you are about to make two new best friends, tequila and despair. So stock up on limes and Kleenex. That's your New England Broadcasting Horoscopes, Cape. I'm Kip Starchild. Until next time, peace.
Jack Arnired is joining us. He's Executive Editorial Director and Executive Market Analyst for Kelley Blue Book. We're all familiar with Kelley Blue Book. It's the Bible of car value. And he joins us now. We're talking about a list that has been put out just now. What does the list tell us?
Well, the list is Best Buys of 2017. And we at Kelley Blue Book on the editorial staff spent about 7 or 8 weeks testing back-to-back something like 50 vehicles. And that vehicle was an elite group of vehicles chosen from 350 or so models out there. And what we put together was a list of what we consider to be the 12 best buys in the American market for 2017 in 12 separate categories.
Okay. So everything was graded in the different categories. Was there an overall category general when you put them all together kind of consideration?
There was an overall winner, and the overall winner is our overall winner for the second year in a row. Uh-oh. It's the Honda Civic.
Oh.
And it's such a terrific vehicle we like it a lot.
So this is based on everything, performance, comfort, price, the whole thing?
Yeah, we really look at vehicles in their own category.
Mm-hmm.
So you would judge a minivan somewhat differently than you judge a two-seat sports car.
Okay.
You know, with somewhat different criteria. That thing about best overall value for the money, though, goes across all the 12 segments.
All right. What's the difference between a minivan and a crossover SUV? It seems that everything on the road now is that crossover thing.
It's getting to be. I mean, that is, you've identified the hottest trend of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
The difference really between a minivan and a crossover is minivans have sliding side doors.
Okay.
That's the biggest difference. They look a little different. I mean, a crossover looks more like a traditional SUV with a traditional hood.
Yes.
A van is obviously much more of a van-like vehicle. It's kind of a box on wheels.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, what about that growing trend category, the crossover SUV? Which ones exceeded there?
There are several in those categories. Mm-hmm. Actually, in the small compact SUV category, yes. A new winner this year is the Kia Sportage.
Oh.
Again, another vehicle that's all new for 2017.
Wow.
I was actually driving one of those yesterday. Terrific vehicle all around. Great
Isn't
vehicle for the money. Very versatile. You have that high seating position that a lot of people like these days.
Uh-huh.
Kias are always filled with features for the dollar.
Yeah.
So the Kia Sportage is a great, great choice there.
Wow.
If you want something larger than that, midsize SUV or midsize crossover, the Honda Pilot is our choice.
Oh.
There are a lot of good ones in that category, but mm-hmm. the Pilot really exceeds all of them. Just great all-around vehicle with incredible Honda reliability, of course. As
Wow. The Kia is interesting because I remember when Kia first came out to the public, it was considered the little cheap car.
Right. They really improved their reputation significantly over time.
I would say so. So what are the trends that seem to be going for the following year? Where are we going vehicle-wise?
Well, we're really going, you know, you kind of identify the biggest trend in the industry already, and that's to taller vehicles, to crossovers, and away from sedans.
Yeah.
It's very difficult in both the luxury and non-luxury areas of the business for car companies to sell sedans. People are wanting these tall vehicles with more versatility. And when you look at the luxury business, it's really all about crossovers. Our luxury crossover winner is the Mercedes-Benz GLC, which is a really cool crossover because it's 40 in addition to you know, having some SUV attributes. But across the board, the move to taller vehicles is an important one.
It seems that rather than buying cars these days, we're buying computers. And I know that a lot of draw to these vehicles is not necessarily the performance of the vehicle, but it's more the software and what it does.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, that's a very good point. I mean, a lot of these vehicles have, you know, more computing power than we use to get to the moon.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of amazing what they will do. You know, on the sporty side of things, our Porsche 718 Boxster is the winner in our sports performance segment, and that has just incredible amounts of tech. The engine controls, safety equipment. In fact, safety equipment across the board is another major, major trend. You know, we're going to see through the next several years is this high technology that's going to help us just be better drivers and be safer drivers.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember, I don't know how old you are, but when I was younger, I used to look out the window while my father was driving, and I'd see all these cars in the breakdown lane with steam coming out of the hood and flat tires all over the place, and you just don't see breakdowns anymore, no matter what time of the year it is. It's kind of interesting how cars...
It's really true. I mean, you know, 100,000 miles a car is just getting broken in these days.
Weird stuff.
And a lot of cars... Well, the average age of a car on the road is something like 11 years, which is amazing, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of those cars are probably due to be replaced, but it also indicates, you know, how durable the vehicles are these days.
Yeah. How much do people pay attention to recalls? That's always in the back of my mind. If it's been in the news that there's been a recall for a certain manufacturer, I psychologically think, uh-oh, how come they couldn't get it right the first time? What's going on with this?
It does. People do pay attention to that, and certainly we at Kelley Blue Book pay attention to that. It is an important area of the business. Kind of depends on what the recall is about,
I guess.
You know, to the severity of it and the number of vehicles that it affects.
Yeah.
We about 2 years ago, we had a record number of recalls, and then that has settled down a bit.
Yeah.
But part of the record number comes from the fact that just so many new cars are being sold. We'll probably sell something like 17 million new cars in America will be bought this year.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of exposure, I guess.
It is a lot of exposure.
If you look at it that way.
At the same time, the price of a good vehicle is tens of, well, it's up to 20, 30,000 average. It's like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the cars on our Best Buy list, the Kelley Blue Book Best Buy list, range from the Honda Civic starts at under $20,000, and then we go up to vehicles that cost, you know, in the $70,000 range. The Chevrolet Tahoe, for example, can be had for something like $70,000.
In some parts of the country, you can buy a house for that.
Yeah, absolutely true. Yeah.
Well, there's tons of things to talk about, but our time is short. If you want to get the full list, and always check in with Kelley Blue Book anyway, no matter what's going on. How do we get in touch?
Well, we're pretty easy to get to. KBB.com is our website. Mm-hmm. You know, millions of people are going there every day. We'd love to have you come and visit us at KBB.com.
Beautiful. Jack, good to speak to you.
Great to talk to you, Ron. Thank you.
Take care. Well, there you have it for today. Hope you've had a wonderful time with me. Have we not had a wonderful time? There'll be a survey that'll be sent to your home. And on that survey, please rate this program accordingly and tell them that you really love it, because when you do, you get a prize. That's not true. That's all a lie. You get nothing whatsoever. I would just appreciate it. Actually, that's not true either. There is no survey. So I guess I lied to you. But I wish you peace.